Shalom, I'm Debbie Young-Summers and welcome to a brand new episode of this season of the Progressively Jewish podcast. Each episode of this monthly series will coincide with Rosh Chodesh, the start of a new Jewish month, and is an opportunity to explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive lens. The month of Adar Rishon begins on the evening of Tuesday, the 1st of February. And to welcome in the new month, I'm having a fantastic conversation with Rabbi Laura Jana Klausner, a former doula and, of course, the former senior rabbi to Reform Judaism. We are going to be discussing rituals around birth and pregnancy. And throughout this conversation, we refer to mothers and to women, but we also want to note that some people who give birth do not identify themselves as women. But over now to our conversation. We hope that you enjoy it. It is a huge pleasure as we start Adar Rishon, the first Adar in our cycle of the months, where we are blessed with two Adars this year. It is a leap year. Huge pleasure to be joined by the one and only Rabbi Laura Jana Klausner, who is here today to talk with me about birth rituals, pregnancy rituals, this sense of those really rituals that have always been around, but I think were not recorded so well until the modern period. But Laura has literally written the book about birthing rituals, at least, if not pregnancy. So we have a proper expert in this area with us today. Welcome, Laura.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you very, very much. I was just thinking between your last name and my last name, that's like half an hour we can go home.
Very long email addresses. So many people may not know that before the rabbinate, Laura was actually a doula in one of the many things she did with her phenomenal life. For those who don't know, what is a doula, Laura?
So I did it voluntarily. In Israel, a doula is a person who is trained very minimalistically, actually, who accompanies women in birth to do what they need in order to supplement themselves, their partner, midwives, doctors. So it's a lot of, yes, can I get you, wipe your face, this is what's happening next, push here, but nothing technical. So I'm trying to think of another world where you would have a comparison. Your deep one, sort of a birth chavruta, a birth partner, and even if there's a partner there, which thank God most of the time there is, to help them. And actually in Israel, there are some. To the right of Orthodox Jews, where the man won't ask for particular permission to touch the wife during birth. So they often have doulas because they won't touch the wife. So they'll stand at the side. I have watched men stand at the side saying Tehillim, Psalms, in the room, like 2 meters away. And I just want to say to them, literally, what the hell? You know, especially as there is a halachic system that you can ask for a heter, permission to touch your wife.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can get a heter, so go get them.
So a heter is like a permission. Havruta, for those who don't know, is a studying in pairs. So it's a kind of someone who you can bounce off of and share ideas with. Interesting what you say about very little training. I think today in the UK, there's quite a lot of training on offer for doulas. There is a much more kind of organized system that people can undertake. I suppose anybody can call themselves a doula. I did for my first child, I hired a doula who was phenomenally brilliant, Lauren Mishkon, who I found through various recommendations. And after we'd had our initial meeting,
I bumped into you, Laura, at a synagogue, and you discovered with great glee that I was finally pregnant and immediately started advising me on perineum massage, which people can Google.
Let's tell people.
The area that will be birthing so that it doesn't rip between where the baby will exit and where other things exit.
I think we're talking your vagina and your anus.
Yes, those two bits. So you don't, if you can avoid ripping there, it's a good thing. You explained this in great detail. You showed me how to massage it.
I didn't. Wait. Hang on a minute. Rewind. Now.
Not in person.
Thank you so much.
Miming.
Just to clarify, miming. Miming, not showing you. People are probably like, what is going on here? I know.
But very important information. And the next time that I met with Lauren, I said, I've met my friend who was a doula, and she said something about perineum massage. And Laura said, oh, thank goodness. I didn't know if I could discuss that with a rabbi. So I'm so glad you brought it up. At which point I said, please don't treat me like a rabbi for the rest of this pregnancy. I'm going to do things in birth that I will not do as a rabbi, hopefully. Please just treat me like a normal mummy.
Yeah, we have perineums that don't want to tear. Perineum massage.
I have to say, personally, having a doula meant having someone who advocated for me and would...
That's a good way of saying it.
Sort of be my voice in the labour room when I couldn't be.
Right, it's like, so I just want to say about perineum massage, you massage it over time so that it gradually stretches so that when the baby's head comes out, if you have a vaginal birth, it doesn't tear. That's what perineum massage is. It's absolutely wonderful and important. So a good parallel to a doula is someone who would come to court with you, sort of to accompany people, who knows enough about the legal system to help, to cheer you on, but isn't a lawyer and therefore doesn't cost what a lawyer costs.
So as a doula, was that what began your interest in birth rituals? And were you able to bring birthing rituals in as a doula? Or are those sort of two different worlds? One is physical and one is spiritual?
No, they're very much the same world, because if you're lucky and you have a birth that is healthy and vaginal, then I'm just trying to work out how many times I can get that word in this session, actually. the spiritual encouragement, prayer, singing, anything will make an enormous difference to people's bodies opening up, because people will not be tense. I think I got
into... I can imagine my husband getting quite tense if women started singing around me in birth, and that kind of makes me laugh.
Right, I'm just withdrawing from the comment even more than the details of the perineum massage. It's much more dangerous. So I got into doula in this, I was that age, and in Israel it was not sort of official in that way. And I was in a hospital where my kids were born, all in the same room, actually, not at the same time. Three of them, thank God, where that was sort of around. And so I got into it because I loved helping people, and I love sort of getting in there and, just if there's something, I want to be by people's side, I suppose.
Do you think that's sort of what began you down the path towards the rabbinate, which is quite similar?
No, I wanted to be a rabbi. So I left Orthodoxy at 12, came to the Reform movement because it was egalitarian. And already at 13, I was telling my uncle, who was the Orthodox chief rabbi in Britain at the time, that I wanted to be a rabbi. So I sort of declared my intention. Well, I'm 58 now. So how many years ago is that? I don't know, loads. Loads of years ago.
But interesting parallels, that sense of walking people's journey with them.
Oh, and also being able to be alongside and not shy away from joy and pain. Mm.
So I've heard women share some incredible rituals that they've been able to initiate or create or be part of, but before birth, during birth, and after birth. And the first and last of those I've done and I think are wonderful. I don't know if I could have managed ritually very much whilst in labour. How do you do that?
So a lot of the focus of my book, which I wrote in 1998.
And which is wonderful.
Thank you. which, and I'm not advertising because it's not on sale at all, it's called Neshama Chadasha, which means a new life or a new soul. It's about birth celebrations and ceremonies. So it's not so much the ritual, I mean, I'm happy to talk about the birth rituals, but the book is about birth celebrations. So now I'm completely distracted from your question, because it was, ask the question again.
So how ritualistic can one be when in labor?
Right, loads.
Can you describe some of those for us?
Okay, so I've seen, well, first of all, the things that, the way that rituals work, and actually more useful for this is the booklet I wrote, DIY Rituals. Actually, that's more useful. For people to relax their bodies in the face of immense fear and pain, and literally for your body to open up, the more something feels safe and contained, the more your body can do what it's built to do, which is to give birth. Part of it, the non-official Jewish or spiritual sides of it are also the ritual, just like, you know, as being a rabbi, you know, someone makes an appointment by email to have a discussion about the wedding. That's part of the ritual. So there are loads of that sort of secular rituals that come in that make people feel safe, how they're admitted, all that stuff, which is very, very important. From the point of view of more sort of officially Jewish rituals, a lot of things that we do, for instance, the saying of psalms, the singing of psalms, lighting of candles, how you relate to different people who come into a birthing room or at home or not, is very profound in impacting on people's capacity to give birth. So I think I have seen rituals around a lot of things around women together in solidarity, a lot about use of water, which is a classic Jewish tool of ritual, vehicle for ritual. Things around candles, lighting candles, what they can possibly mean, that really are helpful. But the thing that we have in Judaism, as do lots of religious civilizations, but the one that we know very well, is the use of song to articulate what the spoken word often can't, and also to be a carrier, a vehicle, a container for emotion that enables more emotion. So if you think of certain songs that are important to you that would invoke tears, that's wonderful. And that is something really to think about in birthing rooms as well.
Apologies. I couldn't hear what you said.
That is my Apple Watch. I'm now going to, I don't know what to do with it. I'm going to move it to the side, but it couldn't hear what I said. So there we go.
Which is probably good.
Yeah, it's very good stuff. So for instance, one of the things, one of the presence of people that women often evoke are our foremothers. What have our foremothers gone through in the past? So whether it's our particular biblical foremothers, or women in history, or our own mothers, to know that other people have done this before is immensely powerful. So rituals whereby you place four mothers and some kind of manifestation of them in the room, or evoke their names or songs with them or blessings with them, is very, very strong. Also just blessings. I mean, the wonderful thing about the blessing, for instance, for opening your bowel, Ashei Yatzar, which is the blessing that very clearly articulates that our open spaces need to open at the right time and our closed spaces need to close at the right time. And if they don't, we can't function. So that is a really interesting blessing to bring into this space and to teach about and talk about. And a lot of our rituals happen in the midst of teaching text. So, you know,
do we have a sense of records of rituals that those foremothers did or you know, had enabled for them? Are there records of any rituals, or do we really only know what's happened in the last 100 years?
Are you talking about our Imahot, as in
Not the matriarchs necessarily, historically, I mean, I suppose anywhere in Jewish history, do we have records of rituals around Jewish women and birth?
Yes, there are some really amazing Yiddish, I'm just looking on my bookshelf to see if I've got it here, Yiddish prayers.
Is that tachinas?
Yeah, like tachinot, which are like
I found the tachinas very often, not always, but often are very self-effacing. And sort of talking about the sin of Eve, and I found them a very not a helpful force for me. I know many women do love them, and I'm sure there are bits that I haven't discovered yet that would be better, but I found them quite a difficult genre to engage with personally.
That's interesting. So tachinas are prayers that are developed by women that parallel the more fixed nature of the predominantly male Siddur prayer book. And it's right what you say about, I don't even think it's self-effacing. I think it's sort of, I don't know, self-flagellation actually. I am but a, you know, sort of reminds you of the High Holy Day liturgy. I'm but a worm, I'm but a short woman, you know, that kind of thing. And I do hear that, but actually you asked about the ritual, and I think, well, twofold. One is I do like quite a lot of them, and ignore the twaddle, which you're definitely right in referring to, and disturbing self-image of women, isn't it, really? But additionally, we have that from time, you know, the Yiddish world, and I don't know if there's a parallel in Ladino or in Hebrew, but in modern Hebrew and in Israel, we definitely have women's prayers and women's poems that are read at birth, before birth, going into labour, being fearful and so on. And that's a fantabulous world. And of course, we in the progressive movements here have written them in ourselves, whether it's in taking up the timbrel, which Rabbi Sybil Sheridan and Rabbi Sylvia Rothschild wrote X amount of years ago, 20, I think. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Remain in Really Useful Prayers, et cetera, et cetera. So I think those are examples of prayers that are brought in as rituals during birth.
It's interesting thinking about the Imaot, who are our actual matriarchs, in that as a woman who went through many years of infertility, they're often kind of held up as these examples of, look, they also all, other than Leah, all struggled to conceive and to, you know, they all cried out to God, but in their cases, their prayers were always answered. And I think when you're in the midst of infertility, that's not always helpful.
Yeah, it sounds like, don't worry, darling. Look, even Sarah, you know, it sounds simplistic, the way mm-hmm. that you're explaining how people did it to you. Is that right? What was it
like?
A
little bit, I suppose. But I think there's also a sense when you are pregnant and when you are labouring, what can you say? Can one have a set liturgy that you know beforehand and then try to bring into that space? Or ritually, does it happen in the moment?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think practicing in advance is a great idea, particularly because when we are in that intense pain, I can't remember what part of our biochemistry is, kicks in and basically wakes us up. We're in excruciating pain and then we go to sleep. So we're in the middle of these humongously intense contractions and then we fall asleep, some of us. You know, I was giving birth with Tal. May they ever be grateful, for 3.5 days.
Oh my Lord.
I know, it's really mad. So I think having things that you know, it's very useful. Of course, the Shaman stuff. A big world that we haven't talked about, Mahusiv world, is amulets. And the whole business with Lilith, that is a massive world of birth rituals, whereby this idea of Lilith, who was the woman who existed before Eve in the Garden of Eden, who was expelled for lots of different reasons, probably not because of her dyslexia, but more because of her
dominance,
and that she said, no, Adam.
Making her a modern heroine rather than a demon.
Exactly. I refer you to Vashti. Anyway, Lilith, the demonization, literally, of Lilith was around. She will come and, God forbid, I'm superstition in me, but puts a God forbid in there, kill your baby, your infant in their cot. But also this idea of, you know, amulets during, I mean, I've seen in hospitals in Israel, loads of women go in with amulets, holding onto an amulet.
I have a little laminated one in my wallet that a friend bought me when I was 22. We were all in Israel, and she's an amazing Polish woman who saw this lovely amulet in a shop in Mesharim and didn't know what it was and bought it for me, and it's been in my wallet ever since.
What was it?
It was an amulet against Lilith.
Right, and what was it meant? Let me just say it differently. What is it proven to do?
The idea is that it should protect a pregnant woman and child in birth and newborn.
There we are.
To stop Lilith from coming to attack.
That naughty
Lilith. Or succeeding in her attack. I think for me, the most astonishing part of the Lilith story is that how widespread it became in the Middle Ages. Mm. Men were told that any emissions at night that were either of their control or beyond their control that did not make it into a woman would inseminate Lilith. And there were Christian monks who were pictured sleeping with crucifixes over their genitals to stop Lilith attacks. Which I think
really
is such a fascinating kind of cross-cultural moving of this midrash.
Nice pun there.
Although Cynthia Ozick argues that it was written around the time of the first exile to Babylon as a way of keeping women in their place, to remind women not to say no and not to try to dominate. That if they did, the punishment would be through their babies.
Did you internalise that message?
I hope not.
I hope not. True.
Seems to have not worked.
I know. Lilith Schmilith.
What would you say to a woman who is listening to this and is expecting a child and would love to bring ritual into birth? Where do you start?
Well, I would start with your rabbi, because just the conversation about what will it be like, what matters to me, is part of the ritual. And the conversation where our rabbis and cantors are trained to say, what matters to you? What are you imagining? What part of the ginormous Jewish world beyond a synagogue, which is literature and language and everything, what part do you relate to? I mean, you know, some people would use modern Israeli song much more than they would, you know, traditional psalms, for instance. And that's our job, is to open up options for that, for people to think about it. But there's also loads of stuff online. I mean, ritualwell.org,
I think.
Yeah, which is unbelievable source of information on new rituals, would be a great place to go.
And we also have this new body of wisdom in the Kohenet movement who are really focused on women's ritual specifically. I think as women rabbis, we've been doing a lot of that stuff for many years anyway, but there's all these, we have I think three now in the UK who are specifically trained in women's ritual and in focusing on this area. I think knowing that there are all these different places one can go, but rabbis are also, we're not bad at this stuff too.
And cantors, yes. So what is a Kohenet? I'm just looking forward to your explanation. I'm going to put that on your shoulders and not mine.
So a Kohenet is someone who has trained at the Kohenet Institute, which is in America, with Rabbi Jill Hammer, Rabbi Kohenet Jill Hammer. And they focus their studies particularly on earth-based feminist Jewish ritual and history and knowledge, and they specialize in women's spirituality, as much as I've understood it. And it is fascinating. I think a lot of the ritual areas are spaces that I've certainly moved in already for many years, but it's wonderful to have colleagues who are helping us to bring that further and out into to Jewish spaces that we don't get to.
That is true.
And of course, one of them, Yael, has recorded last month's Progressively Jewish, I think, and certainly is one of our editors and contributors and would probably have lots to say on this topic as well. There has been the custom that I have heard of tefillin somehow being involved in birth rituals. Have you ever seen that happen, that tefillin get tied to beds and things?
Oh my gosh, yes. I haven't seen it happen, but I know that some people do it. I love tefillin, but
it seems like an odd combination of Jewish rituals in that tefillin contain within them scrolls, that there is a misconception, actually. I suppose it helps to highlight the misconception. There's this odd misconception that women and their blood might somehow contaminate any scroll, which of course is myth and not real. But then for there to be this tradition to bring tefillin into the birthing room, where Evie's already said there are men who won't touch the woman for fear of contamination, even though they can get a heter, it's an interesting kind of counterbalance of why bring that into this space when it, again, traditionally would have been, maybe it was a more egalitarian ritual than we think because they allowed them into that space.
I think it functions exactly, well, not exactly, but in a parallel way to the amulet. Mm-hmm. If you, the most superstitious time for me, I'll do more spitting, saying purr, touching wood, which is basically the crucifix, just hedging my bets. You know, the time I feel most anxious is around birth. Definitely. And if I want to bring in something which seems to have extra layers of power in some kind of way, things that are hidden, because of course tefillin are so inter, you know, you've got the different compartments, they're all sort of hidden. If I wanted to bring in a mobile artifact that God might listen to, I can't take my mezuzah off, so why not the tefillin? So I think it functions emotionally like that. I'm holding on to my tefillin and therefore it will be okay. And actually, it's funny you say this, because I have next to me on my desk tefillin, sort of model, not model tefillin that are disqualified.
Fasol,
yeah. But I use them for teaching because you can see the insides of them. And if I hold these tefillin in my hands, do I feel in some hocus pocus way that things will be better? Yes. Hmm. Well, that's pretty bonkers. But that, you know, giving birth where you are so close to life and death, we do not have any other moment of that proximity where you really are so close to life and death. And actually, if we talk about rituals, we must not forget the most bog standard ritual around birth, which is Birkat HaGomel, that afterwards we say in public, either in synagogue or at home, but with other people who respond, it's a very unusual kind of blessing because we respond to it, thank you, God, for showing me favour. And that's the blessing we say when we have an accident or when we give birth, because we are near death. And it is very frightening giving, it's pretty amazing, but also this person is coming through you that, God forbid, might die, and they're listening to the heartbeat, and you're thinking about your own heartbeat, and then you're bleeding, and how much are you bleeding? That is unbelievable moment of proximity. So it's not surprising someone wants to grab a hold onto a pair of tefillin.
What has been your favourite way of bringing ritual into the birth room?
Actually, the most simple things that people remember, saying the Shema, saying Shehecheyanu, and Shehecheyanu is not for when the baby is born. Often it's for marking something that's happened. So if there's something specific that happens in the birth process, which marks that's the end of that, to say that. So actually, I think that because you are in such a primal state, the less sophisticated, the better. Moments of just singing the same chant, saying the same blessing, making up blessings, which is basically, it sounds making up, it's such a Jewish way to say making up. If it was Christians, you wouldn't say making up, would you? In that kind of derisory way, you'd be like, creating.
Crafting.
Crafting, exactly. So saying from your heart and soul's desire, those are the best things. I think the more sophisticated, the more likely you are to forget, and you're in such a primal state and you're so knackered that what matters is just really the most Jewish basic things that we have, modani, you know, those things.
And ritual is such a powerful way of allowing us to feel what we need to feel. Actually, I think in birth, you can't do anything but feel what you need to feel. There's no room for masks or pretending or, you know, strong up, stiff upper lip type stuff. You know, you just feel everything. I wonder if actually the ritual is more for the partner and everyone else present to help get them through supporting this woman who is feeling everything she is feeling.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I mean, I think you're right. The partner and whoever is around or is involved in that ritual, because of course ritual like that is so public and needs the reciprocity of the moment. However, I have seen a lot of women hold it back, and it's so difficult to see them that, because they think, you know, what's the right thing to do and what's appropriate. And a lot of people call out for their mothers. I've heard a lot of people shouting for their mothers and then shouting at their partners, which is great.
I would definitely shout it at my partner. I thought he was saying something he wasn't.
Lol.
I was asking for pain relief with number two because he was induced, and I thought I'd be fine because I've done this once before. I know what this is like. I don't want any pain relief except gas and air. And turns out induction is very, very different.
Oh my gosh, it's intense.
And I started to say, no, you've got to stop this and I need some pain relief. And I thought he said, don't worry, she doesn't really want it. Don't do anything.
Brilliant.
And I may have sworn at him.
I think that's actually fine.
He was saying, please make it better and give her whatever she wants. But actually, at that point, they said I could push anyway, so we didn't have to. Laura, I want to say a huge, huge thank you to you for your willingness to come and open up this area of ritual that often isn't talked about because it is such a private space in a person's life. And I think some of the most wonderful rituals for me personally have always been around how we make private space for ritual, around mikveh and around things that aren't about community and food and family, which so much of Jewish ritual is. What would be your one top tip of where someone who wants to do something like this should go and start their research?
Yeah, I think somebody who loves ritual, one of our clergy, is best. Because then it's about a conversation. Because you'll probably take to the internet, but actually...
And if you're going to go to the internet, Ritual Well is a pretty solid place to start.
It is. But ritual is about bespokeness and making it co-creating, and that you need to do with someone else, I think.
That is a beautiful way of expressing it. Thank you. So thank you from all of us at Progressively Jewish
for your
time and your wisdom. And we hope to see everyone healthy and joyous in Adar Sheni. We'll see you all then.
Thank you so much to Laura Jana Klausner, but of course also to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism and Leo Beck College for supporting Progressively Jewish. Don't forget to subscribe to the Progressively Jewish podcast and to leave us a positive comment or review with your podcast provider. We hope that you'll recommend us to your friends and fellow congregants, those who are Jewish and people of all faiths and none. To share your ideas on the future of this podcast, either comment on the Progressively Jewish Facebook page or email us at progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. Next month, we will be beginning Adar Sheni.